So I really had nothing on a cold open for this morning. Do you got anything?
Well, I'm back in Los Angeles now. I live here. That's exciting,
That's
right?
exciting. That's good news.
I will say I was kind of hoping for better weather from Los Angeles. All these years I lived here before, and it was always sunny and wonderful, and now it's cloudy.
And rainy? Did you get, were you there during the big rains?
No, we missed, I missed all the big rain.
Oh, that's good.
But I got the luscious green
Nice.
fields of from your marijuana
Sure.
fields. You know
Right.
how green it can
Right.
get.
I do. And it's turning into the rainy season down here, too. So we've actually seen some raindrops. This is so exciting. This is maybe the worst cold open ever.
You know what? This is the Milli Vanilli of cold opens, and I blame it on the rain.
Giggling under my breath. Way to bring, I think we've had Milli Vanilli in a few times on our show over the years. Actually, it is years now.
I feel like Milli Vanilli as a cultural touchstone is highly underutilized. Because, first of all, those songs were actually pretty good, and that's not even like my kind of music.
Right.
But secondly, and maybe it's because one of them wound up committing suicide, so it's,
Oh, did they really? I didn't even know
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it turned out that, I don't know if you heard this, John, they actually couldn't sing.
No, I didn't. I did know that. They
Yeah.
were just,
But you know
the
what?
faces of the
It
music.
wasn't just about the singing. It was about the coordinated dance moves and the
And the
big
hair.
shoulder and the hair, the big shoulder pad jackets
Right.
and
That
the
was awesome.
hair.
They
Let's
were
see
hip.
someone else do that. I couldn't do
I
that,
couldn't
John.
pull
Could
that off.
you?
No, not at all.
People would laugh me out of the industry.
Right.
Trust me, I tried.
That's good times. So last week we talked about how we were going to kind of open up the show, what we were
Yeah.
going to use to open it up, and I said that, let's
Sure.
do a double. So this is episode 102 of Foul Territory. I'm John Sumple. He's Jed Rigney.
I am Jed Rigney.
And we mentioned that we're going to use as our moniker for the show the top 100 comedies of all time. And this is
I'm
according to.
dubious of this idea, but let's give it a shot and see how it goes.
Well, we're gonna, but we got to catch up. So number one would have been Some Like It Hot, a very
No,
good
wait.
film.
Who's according to this? Whose list is this?
This is IMDb.
Okay, IMDb. All right.
Okay, and
Wait.
they vary quite a bit depending on
Yeah.
what list you look at. I and
Well,
I
it's
would
subjective,
agree.
John. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, it is very subjective. So in number two, according to IMDb's list, is Caddyshack.
Oh, okay. What an interesting combo. Some Like It
Yeah,
Hot and
and
Caddyshack.
Caddyshack.
I will say Caddyshack still holds up to this day. In terms of quotability, great moments,
Sure.
and jamming plots into a comedy film. That's like, oh, you know what? We need to have like a little plot at the end. Okay, yeah. Let's do a little golf tournament.
Right, right. So we'll call
Let's
this.
do like a golf match. They're gonna play against each other. That'll be the big plot. Oh, okay. Can you imagine someone trying to push that plot nowadays? That's the problem with
Right.
comedies. Is like everything has to be like liar, liar with like these big concepts where it can't just be like, hey, what about just a bunch of fun stuff that happens at a golf course?
And
I'm telling
there's
you,
been
that's the
plenty
problem
of
with
those
comedy these
movies
days.
that have been made that are, bring in the stars and they're just total garbage. But
Well,
this
you
one
want to
kind
know
of
why
worked
they're garbage?
because they're
Do you
paid
want
a
to know
lot of
why they're
money and they
garbage?
just show up and phone it in.
Well, here's the thing. It's also, I mean, yeah, that's part of the problem too. But when you're talking about like first films, right? Like first, not like sequels where everyone's like
Right.
paid and they're just lazy and whatever. But when people are trying to make a really good film, which they always do in the first one, they always try to make a really good one. But the problem is that they let these guys improvise so much because they just get bored with the material. Because be honest with you, John, when you're acting out a comedy scene for a film in front of whatever 20, 30 crew, it's hard to imagine that the line that you've said 20 times in rehearsals, in the script read, in the rehearsals, and then there on the set, it's hard to imagine that that's actually still funny. So then it's like the improvised thing becomes the funniest thing.
Right.
relative, but it isn't, and it doesn't tie the story together properly and doesn't have the proper writer layers and blah, 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 and tie it together. And so you get these sort of like these films. I remember the best example of this is Talladega Nights, the Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah.
I read the script on that before the shooting script. That's a great script.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first 20 pages of that script are tight as a button. If that's, is that an expression? Tight as a button?
It is now, yeah.
Is tight as a drum.
Right.
But then what happened was they get Will Ferrell on set and Sacha Baron Cohen and John C. Reilly, and they just start improvising. And then they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, we'll leave all the improvised scenes in. But then it becomes this disjointed mess.
Still funny.
It's funny, but it's not great funny. Like, no one's going to be like, wow, we're not going to see Talladega Nights on this list.
Probably not.
And if we do, then we need to get a new list because that's not a top. Maybe in the top thousand.
I'll check the list. I'll swipe through the list.
All right.
See what we come up with. So this is the Some Like It Caddyshack episode.
Some Like It Caddyshack.
Yes. And now that we've got that out of the way, we can get into this week's headlines.
Oh, right. Baseball.
Yeah, it's a baseball podcast. So we got the kids. The kids are coming up in droves.
Yes.
This is good.
Yes.
Good for baseball.
Now, I want to say a couple things about this. Like, some people are going to say, like, oh, well, it's because they passed the service time marker. But Nick Senzel and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., two of the top prospects in baseball, are up now. Senzel's coming up today. They came up because of legitimate... They were delayed because of legitimate reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carter Kieboom went up for the Nationals. Like, that's early. He wasn't expected till next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nate Lowe for the Rays was expected like later in the year, but they brought him up early. So like, good for these teams for like what the Padres are doing. Like, I don't think the Padres wind up better than like 82 wins, but like bringing up Tatis, I'm like, Tatis was a man on fire before he did the splits and wrecked his groin. Did you see that thing?
I haven't seen the clip.
Oh my God. So painful to watch.
Eesh.
He was doing a little stretch at second base to get a guy out, and just fell went a little too. It was like
a
Prince.
Too far. Yeah, you can't go that far sometimes.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Anyway,
ouch.
But it's exciting. All these young players get it younger. Like, bring up 18-year-olds.
Why not? If they're good, sure. Why not? But we
if
had a couple 19-year-olds last year, right? And Guerrero's only. Was it
and let's 20? Just be clear, John. We're talking about we had 19-year-olds. We're talking about baseball players who were called up by their teams, and not some other weird.
Right.
Perverted thing, you perverts who are listening and thinking that we're meaning gross things.
So one of the things that I had read about Guerrero is that pitchers are already pitching around him. Do you believe that?
No.
I don't either. I think that's kind of silly. It's kind of like looking for a story.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have a walk in his first four, whatever.
He went up packing in his first few games. He was looking for the big hit. And
he was channeling his dad.
Almost got a home run in his first game.
Yeah.
Head to the wall. It was caught at the wall, which was that was exciting.
But he got the game-winning hit, but his double, he got a pinch runner for him, but then the double, he had a double, they pinch ran for him, that guy scored to win the game. So.
Right. And I think Carter Kieboom on his, I don't know if it was his first game, but he pinch hit with the runner on second and third, two outs in the ninth inning of a game. They were down by one run and struck out.
Yeah.
So an auspicious start.
Well, he's already got two home runs, though.
No, I bet just that moment, it was just kind of like, oh, there's the kid. He's the future. Oh.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things about baseball that is always so interesting is that we're so caught up in that moment.
Yeah.
That it's like, this is just a speck of time. You know, it's just a flash when you look at the length of a baseball career anywhere.
Okay,
from,
Einstein.
10 to 15
slow it down.
Years.
Let's slow it down, Interstellar. So we're going into the black hole, and we lose how many years?
Yeah, well, then you have to watch the Avengers because they go back in time. So
oh yeah, see, I'm not a big fan of the time traveling stuff. I mean, I like Memento's time traveling, but that's different.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah,
literally.
I don't know. When I saw the first one, I thought like Avengers, oh, they got to do time travel, right? Okay, well, fair enough.
Well, you knew.
I'm sure it's done well. I'm sure it's done well. But here's the thing. What about an Avengers movie where all the people that died in the first one are just dead?
How about that?
What about that? What about that kind of like reality for kids?
They should do a time travel and say that the next one is like Avengers Endgame if it wasn't the Endgame.
Nice.
Avengers redo, and it's like this
on
is
a different timeline.
Yeah, yeah. Avengers alternative reality or alternative Endgame.
Yeah,
I like that. Let's do it. Pitch it.
Yes.
So the Nationals in the NL East is up for grabs, you know, as of right now, and these teams are going to be beating each other up all season. But the Nationals fired Derek Lilliquist, their pitching coach, because they have three of the best pitchers in the game, and they're not delivering. What would be the thinking there?
I think because look, we're going to get into some of the things that the starting pitchers are doing, but I don't know that the pitching coach is the problem.
It
maybe
doesn't
just
seem like it.
Maybe like I mean, I think whenever you start losing the pitching coaches and stuff, that's the first sign for like the manager's been told he needs to change something,
right?
Or change himself. And the manager's never going to change himself. Right. That's the easiest job in the world is being a baseball manager.
Right.
He's never going to be like, oh, you know what? This one's on me. I'm going to fire myself.
Yeah. I'm stepping down.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I guess some of their pitching, their relief pitching is having some trouble. I mean, it's a mess, right? Like, the Trey Turner injury has really affected them. And then, who's over at third base? Rendon.
Mm-hmm.
He's having trouble. He's got some injury stuff going. He got hit by a pitch. The guy over at first, Zimmerman, who's always injured. This is his last year of being injured for the Nationals, by the way. he's got plantar fasciitis.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't know how much of the season he'll lose to that. But even if he comes back, if he can't plant his feet when he's swinging, he's not going to hit anything.
No.
So we saw Albert Pujols go through that, and he wound up just having to shut down for the year. And then look how he turned out.
Yeah.
So. Of course, he's 5 years older than he says he is, so whatever. Allegedly.
He's a Franco?
I'm just saying, there's some compelling evidence, but maybe it's not 5 years.
Sounds like a documentary film.
He's still a Hall of Famer. Yes. Don't get me wrong, still a Hall of Famer. I don't care what age you put those numbers up at, he still put them up.
So one thing that I wanted to kind of throw up there so we could chat for a little bit is the Mariners. Who started out like a house of fire. They were like plus 59 in run differential.
Right.
And then they were down to two. So how does that happen in a matter of, I think it was only like 8 or 9 games.
And how did they not fire their pitching coach?
I know. They've been blown out regularly in their last.
Derek Lilliquist is like, wait a second. Don't fire me. Fire the Mariners guy.
Yeah, you know, it's just that team has gone from. There's even headlines in Seattle papers saying like the Mariners now playing like the team we thought they'd be. So it's like, the illusion is over. The reality is setting in.
They sent
Malik
Smith down.
Yeah.
Oof. I mean, not that he was like some big acquisition, but oof.
I mean, Jay Bruce is hitting like .150. He's got 9 home runs or something like that, but he's. Still batting is horrible. They're gonna continue to drop. They will probably wind up finishing. They'll be competing maybe with the Angels for last place. We'll see.
I still think the Angels have enough stuff.
Although the A's have been horrible too. They've plummeted. Yeah. They lost 6-7
the A's
in
are,
a row.
Yeah.
Something like that.
The A's have been. I mean, really, I think that the. So what do you have in that division? You have the Rangers, terrible. The Mariners. I don't think the Mariners are as bad as the Rangers, but they are not a good team.
Yeah, 500 team at best.
At best. And maybe with that big start, that'll be enough to get them keep them at 500 for the year. Mm-hmm. And then the Athletics just like, they just seem to be, like, whereas everything was sort of synced up last year, like, I don't know, maybe they bring up Jorge Mateo and he can run around the bases like a madman and get them fired up. But that Profar for Jed Lowry swap hasn't worked, and Profar seems to have the yips over at second base now. He's already got, like, I think he leads the league in errors for second baseman.
But in true A's fashion, they're going to, you know, go on this run and flip
probably,
it.
Probably, right?
And then they'll, because they've done this, even when they have had horrible teams, they have always wound up better than you thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
And they always wind up, you know, putting together the little runs of the second half where they're, you know, playing 550, 560 ball, and they wind up, you know, better than you thought, but there's no way they're winning 95 plus games this year.
If they bring up Luzardo, I think they think he's gonna be up in about a month, and you bring up Jorge Mateo to just, you know, light a fire under these guys' butts, and he just runs around the bases, stealing, whatever, 40 bases in half a season. I mean, you have the elements there. They have the quality players to go on a run. So it's not like it's the Mariners team where it was all kind of smoke and mirrors while it was happening.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the A's turn it around. They have a good team.
Yeah.
And Olsen is coming back. He's healing quickly from his injury.
Yeah.
So he should be back in June, which will be a boost.
Yeah, and unfortunately for the Angels, Cody Allen got put on the injured list, so they don't have to worry about him.
He's
a bad pitcher. He was a bad pitcher last year. He shouldn't have been given $8 million to keep pitching and certainly not to close games.
Yeah.
I mean, I have eyeballs. I'm not a scout, but I have eyeballs.
Right.
I see a pitcher who's no longer what he was.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing for relief pitchers, because if you're a starter, you can always move to the bullpen.
Right.
If you're paid a lot of money to be a closer and you can't get the job done, there's no place to go.
Yeah, it's AAA or home, you know.
Yeah, you're pretty much done. So even though the Nationals have fired their pitching coach, Matt Scherzer and Strasburg have hit some pretty major milestones.
Right.
Scherzer, the third fastest pitcher to hit 2,500 career Ks, and Strasburg is the fewest number of innings to reach 1,500 career Ks.
Right.
The guys are throwing smoke.
Yeah. Now, it's a funny thing about Strasburg, because he won't break the record for fewest games to 1,500 career strikeouts, because he's had so many games where he only pitches five innings. They pull him out, whether it's because he's having injury problems or he ran up the pitch count too high, or they're just trying to be careful with his arm. But maybe innings is a better is it more impressive to do it in innings now, especially when you consider that the average starting pitcher used to throw more innings 20 years ago than they do now. So it's maybe the per inning thing is more impressive than per game, but
Yeah, because you're not going to be seeing the pitchers of the future are not going to be going, you know, seven innings is a superior outing.
Yeah, that's unusual.
Yeah. Five is going to become the new norm. They're going to have to adjust some of their statistics and what a quality start is, and, you know, how do you get. So now you're getting, you know, six guys with holds, you know, status. the hold statistic has zero value whatsoever.
Holds me closer, tiny pitcher.
So the Brewers made a huge signing, the Gio Gonzalez, after he opted out from the Yankees. They went and scooped him right up.
Yeah, and then they started him like the next day.
And how did he do?
In a major league game, he did okay.
Yeah. Maybe he feels more comfortable in I just think he's not
in the
a
majors,
great fit.
Then
no, he's not a great fit in New York at all.
Well, he didn't even get a chance there.
No, but I think he's happy about that, to be honest with you.
The one depth problem the Yankees haven't had is starting pitching. They have the Severino injury, but everyone else, Paxton, Happ, Sabathia came back, and they have Domingo German, who's I'm not saying he is one of the best pitchers in baseball right now, but his numbers are one of the best.
Yeah, he's one of the best stories. Early season.
Yeah.
Unexpected. Yeah.
A delight.
So CC, you mentioned CC Sabathia. He gets to 3,000 Ks in his career.
Yeah.
And Buster Olney had a article earlier this week saying that CC Sabathia is a Hall of Famer.
I was thinking about that, and I think he might squeak in on the personality and longevity ballot. So not first ballot. But everyone really likes him. By all accounts, he's a really good
guy. They want him in the club.
And it's like, well, we don't want to keep him out of the club. And then if you look around, he's better than some of the pitchers that are in there, but that's not really an argument. That's more an argument against some of the pitchers that are in there. But 3,000 Ks is a lot of Ks, especially he's a guy I think who, you know, 3-4 years ago, we were all just like, well, he's baked.
Right.
And he managed to, you know, find a new pitch.
Himself,
I think it's the cutter, right? Mm-hmm. I think he wound up starting to throw the cutter, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, able to give himself another. They've not been great years, but they've been solid years.
Yeah, like, he's an innings eater now, and
worthwhile. Well, let's not. I mean, he's doing five innings a game, but he does get those five innings a game, and they're. you can't say it's a quality start, but they're usually quality innings.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly so. Like, it's, you keep thinking that the, you know, the wheels will fall off the cart because it's a heavy load that that cart is carrying.
It is.
With Sabathia. But it's, he's holding it together, and he, you know, he's become, I mean, he was always such a dominant pitcher, but he's really like a, he was a thrower, and now he's a thrower pitcher. Now he's just a pitcher, and he's like, mm-hmm. using the strike zone and changing speeds and doing all the crafty veteran things. You know?
Yeah, and is this his 19th season?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Doesn't seem like it. But that's when he's one of those players that was dominant in the early part of his career.
Yeah.
He had that magical season when he was traded to the Brewers and just dominated. I mean, just dominated right. every time they gave him the
pitched
ball.
On 3 days rest.
Yeah, and they gave him the ball quite frequently.
down the stretch.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, you know, you have to look at those numbers too, versus just the softer numbers in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
So the Dodgers, first team to 20 wins, is this critical to their success, you think? Fast start?
Well, first of all, they made the World Series last year, and having started whatever 12-24 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So this year they're more firing on all cylinders to start. But the interesting thing about the 20 wins is that the last 3 years, the first team to 20 wins has won the World Series.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Something to think about.
Something. Well, we'll have to revisit this.
Yeah.
And
certainly we'll have to revisit it by the World Series, right?
Yeah.
See if it's four in a row.
No, well, if it is, we'll have to come back to this point and say.
I mean, Kershaw looks very good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say he looks great, but he looks very good. And they have all the depth you could ever want. Hell, they got Julio Urias and Ross Stripling in the bullpen. Like, Stripling is a number two starter on almost any team in the league, and he's the sixth starter for the Dodgers. Ryu's killing it. Bueller's finally up to speed. Like, and the offense is just crazy.
Yeah, Bellinger's having a season for the ages.
Bellinger's going nuts. Have you seen his swing? I don't think I've ever seen such a violent left-handed swing before. Like, it's a
like
weird combination.
Long swing too, right? That
it exactly. Like, it reminds me of Albert Bell, but like with a mix of like a sweet lefty swing, like Sean Green. I don't know if you guys are too young to know who those people are, then screw you guys. But they're not that old. But Albert Bell just like attacked the baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Well, we'll see if he can sustain it the whole season. If he does, he's in the hunt for the. Well, not in the hunt. He's
well,
the
I mean, yeah. If he
right
can sustain this,
MVP.
He's they're going to put him in the Hall of Fame afterwards. I will say my one concern in watching him is that he does seem to get like very emotional. Like, he's not taking ground out, you know, like bad hits in stride and like bad calls from umpires. Like, he seems to be getting like, so of course, maybe it's just some roid rage. I don't know. I'm not saying
it's
he
like,
is, but
dude, you were the player of the month.
Yeah.
Chill.
But like, he's, it's very important, I think, as a baseball player to know that you're going to make outs and just to kind
of
be okay with making
outs. You're a failure 70% of the time you go up to the plate. So they have to understand that. And I mentioned player of the month. So Tim Anderson, Cody Bellinger, players of the month for April, Tyler Glasnow and Luis Castillo, pitchers of the month.
And good for Castillo. Remember last year, everyone was all excited about him coming into the year, and he just could not control the zone.
Year,
and then he has
sure.
been so dominant this year.
Yeah. And the Reds are surprising a little bit. They're
They still having trouble with the offense. Nick Senzel comes up. I hope they just throw him in the leadoff spot just from the get-go. Like, let's just make this work. But Puig has been awful. Like,
it was the fight.
He was awful before the fight, too. So he's got 4 home runs, which I guess is okay, right? That's on pace for 22 home runs. That's not what you want from Puig. You want 30 and 20 stolen bases. And, you know, like, of course, you know, JD Martinez for the Red Sox, he's only got 4 home runs. This guy's turned into a singles hitter.
Yeah.
Like, there's something wrong with that dude.
Yeah, he's not getting
hitting 350, but it's all singles. Like, hey, slow it down. Save the singles for the night for the strip club. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I didn't pay $39 for singles.
Yeah. Hey, nice on base percentage.
Thanks. That's not what I wanted.
How about getting some runs batted in every now and then? How about when there's a runner on first and second, you don't hit a dribbler to the mound that counts as a single, but is just a dribbler to the mound.
Right.
But I think he's injured. I think he's got something going on that he's not talking about because, A, he's got his contracting at the end of the year, of course, and also baseball players are kind of private about that stuff for whatever reason. But there's no way that monster hitter has only four home runs without there being something wrong. And you can't say, like, oh, they haven't played games at Fenway because they've played games at Fenway. And you can't say, well, I haven't faced any of the crappy teams. They've faced crappy teams. And he's still just punching Judy, man. Punching JD.
maybe he was part of the Fortnite crew.
Right, the Fortnite crew.
So they're no longer playing Fortnite in the clubhouse, right?
Yeah, once a year there's a team that announces that, like, they've banned the team from playing a particular video game that's popular. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, they're no longer, boom boxes have been banned, or you know, a certain game has been banned, or fried chicken and beer has been banned. There's always something that throughout a season, especially when a team that you have high expectations for, something goes a little sideways.
And there's probably some truth to it, you know, like, I mean, this is the World Series champ and they're not really playing like it in all aspects of the game.
Yeah, they have that little
spurt. Some of it's just dumb baseball luck.
Yeah. Well, like Chris Sale, off to a horrible start.
No one saw
this coming.
I mean, it's a little terrifying because he's kind of getting craftier and doing better, but it is not the Chris Sale like that, you know, was like you tune in and just like watch this guy. He's like elbows and knees everywhere and striking everybody out. It's more like, no, he's getting around the edges and, you know, getting it up to 92. Like, nah, that guy needs to be 95. Where's my 95, Chris Sale?
Yeah. Well, he's worked through his spring training now. So his season starts officially this week. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
So Noah Syndergaard shaved his beard.
Yeah.
Goes out, pitches a shutout, hits a home run.
Right. Yeah.
It's a pretty good outing.
That's how you do it, man.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. I can't imagine he's going to grow the beard back, right? Like, you, as a baseball player, you have to leave the beard off, right?
He has to now. You know, there's most players have that kind of rhythm thing. And if something's working for them, they'll keep it. If it's something's not working for it and they change it, they'll stay. Yeah, but because the beard's not going to grow back overnight. Although, you know, Bryce Harper's does. Seems like whenever he shaves it, it's back, you know, 2 days later.
I will say, though, there's not a lot of, like, real-life corollary for these sort of superstitions. Like, you imagine, like, some guy, like, has a beard at a marketing job, and, like, he shaves his beard and, like, makes a big sale. Like, well, did I make the sale with the guy because I didn't have a beard?
No, it's, but you know what? It's lucky underwear.
But, well, I'm talking about like an actual, I'm trying to physical make an thing. Actual correlation.
Yes,
like, so did they like me more without the beard? Like, you got to think, like, maybe they like me more without the beard.
Yeah, could be.
Ah, think
Stick
about
with it.
Yeah, it's important.
All you marketers.
Hey, if your sales are down, listen
Shave
up.
Shave your beard.
Jed Rigney's top sales tips. If your sales are down, shave that beard. If you don't have a beard, grow a beard. Right. Maybe people want a beard to be comforted and to curl up into a comfortable ball of security and will buy your products, services, merchandise.
Sounds like a book.
I swear, John, I feel like I should have started some sort of pyramid scheme. I love the idea of being the guy at the top of the pyramid scheme.
Looking down.
And I think, yes, they're terrible and they exploit people's weaknesses and all that stuff. And then, you know what? But here's the thing. The world needs pyramids. Otherwise, why would the aliens have made them?
Right. That's good. So Corey Kluber, against the Marlins, of all teams, gets a liner off the arm, fracture.
Oh.
So is this a bad break or was it a...
Well, they're supposed to know today... So, first of all, let's do it like we heard it and it's bad news, out for the season. Okay, that's how we're going to do it. Oh, yeah. No, this is awful for the Indians. They already lost Clevinger for an extended period of time. Kluber out for the season. Brutal. Mm-hmm. And also, my fantasy baseball, my other money fantasy baseball league, Kluber was one of my big guys. I don't know what to do. All right, good. Now, switch back over to it's just going to be like 6 or 8 weeks.
They dodged a bullet there.
They dodge a bullet there, John. I think that the Indians, like, they have enough depth with their pitching that they can, you know, it's not like Kluber was, you know, pitching the cover off the ball. I guess you don't really pitch the cover off the ball. You know, I'm having trouble with my metaphors, my idioms today, John.
That's okay.
But I feel good with it just being a small displaced fracture, and it's going to heal in 6 weeks, and he'll be ready to throw, and then that gives him another couple weeks. So that's 2 months. Yeah, it's a lot of season, but there's still 2 more months after that. Maybe even 3 if you're able to do math.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. So either one of those is the way it's going to go. So different timelines there. We included both timelines for your listening enjoyment.
Just for your listening pleasure. So Aaron Hicks is finally on the way back to the big club, doing some rehab.
The bigger story, he's playing, he's moving around, he's doing baseball activities. He passed Jacoby Ellsbury. Of course, my 75-year-old dad passed Jacoby Ellsbury as well. So,
where is Jacoby Ellsbury? Is he sitting in a dugout somewhere?
What's the thing they said about him recently? He has a number of issues that are being addressed. Like, basically, this is what they're saying is, we don't ever want him to play for us because we think he's terrible, and we just want to collect the insurance money.
Yeah, so stay on the bench.
Yeah.
Do limited amount of work.
Yeah.
Don't improve.
Yeah.
Show no signs of improvement.
Yeah.
And we're good. We'll cover that.
And collect your $180 million or
and
whatever.
And be happy, yeah.
And be happy. I would be happy, John.
So when is Aaron Hicks due back?
Well, I think he's supposed to be back in the next week or so, but it's more like, okay, here come the real Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see if the real Yankees can do as well as the fake Yankees or the substitute Yankees, because the substitute Yankees have done pretty good.
Yeah. They have done very well.
Like, all terrible batting averages and stuff, but it's when they're getting their hits.
Yeah, so they've weathered the storm.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Yeah, that would be interesting to see a swan dive, you know, after this. If you get
they all come back.
And it's like,
they all come back and then just go on a losing streak.
Yeah.
Great.
So Shohei is coming back to the Showtime.
Showtime
Ohtani is due back way ahead of schedule, right?
Well, they did say he was going to hit in May, and so it looks like he's going to hit in May.
Well, way ahead of your schedule.
Way ahead of my schedule.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were giving us the manager ease of, like, we hope to have him in May, and it's like, okay, so maybe by the end of the year.
Right.
But yeah, he's you know, looks to be up and running, and the team needs him. And then you got to figure they're going to take it. They brought up Griffin Canning, and he pitched well.
Mm-hmm.
He's their top pitching prospect. And then the other guy you wonder about is Joe Adell, and then maybe if he can go on a heater down at AA, bring him up and, you know,
see what happens.
Who knows? See what happens. So it's a softer run to the AL wild card than it was when the season started.
So let's talk a little bit about this Jeopardy dude.
Yes.
I have not followed it other than kind of seeing it populate in headlines every now and then, and the first time I think I saw it was on ESPN of all places. But this guy apparently is just basically rewriting the history of the game show. That Ken Jennings guy who won boatloads of money, but over a long period of time, is going to be passed by this guy in probably 2/3 of the time.
Right.
But I haven't followed it.
Is it more money per inning? Is that
more money
per game?
Yeah. But the thing that I find amazing about this is how people are posting on social media how excited they are to watch, you know, that night's episode.
Yeah.
Which is like, really?
This is the hero that we need right now.
Wow.
Like, with all of this toxicity in politics and all that, like, this is something we can all agree on. Just a smart guy running up a big tally. Like, that's something that no one can be like, I'm on this other person's side. Or like, no, I'm on the network side. I want the network to keep their money.
Well, Well, they're like, getting eyeballs, so that's where they're getting their money. Because
everybody wins. That's the thing. Yeah. There should be more things like this. There's no my team lost or everyone wins if they get onto this bandwagon. There is no loser. I mean, yes, the losers that he faces each night who have to hang their head in shame afterwards. But like, is there really any shame to losing to the greatest Jeopardy champion of all time? Now, granted, if I got on Jeopardy, I wouldn't want to go up against the greatest champion of all time. I would want to go against Dave.
I want to go against the person who had the lowest number of a returning champion ever, so I knew I had a shot.
Yeah, I want Dave the janitor who's just a fill-in because the other contestant didn't show up. Yes, that's what I want.
But I also read something that he uses intimidation. So he'll randomly go all over the board, and he does that to confuse people, to the patterns of randomly going all over the board instead of vertically down a column.
Oh, okay.
Strategy.
I can see that that would have some marginal value. And this is why apparently some Major League Baseball teams are interested in him, because baseball teams want like smart guys that are just going to look at things different and just other ways of problem solving than what you get or what you've been getting.
Just what the scouts want to hear.
Well, it doesn't necessarily be about like, it doesn't necessarily have to be about like a player, like scouting players. Financial stuff or there's so many different ways you can put a big brain to use.
Right.
Allegedly.
We'll see what happens. So the kind of the big news that came out this week for Major League Baseball is attendance is down again. Last year there was the blip of the weather, the horrible month of April being blamed for what was going on. That's not an excuse this year. Weather's been relatively decent, but the numbers are down, especially for these tanking teams.
Right, and this year there's more tanking teams than there were last year. And I saw the number. I think it was something like 80,000. And I thought that doesn't seem like it's really that many down.
It's two games, you know?
Right, but I'm just thinking, like, if you're looking, like, how many games were there in April?
Right, no, it's not a lot.
You got to figure, like, 25 times 15, right? So you're talking about 300?
Yeah, so it's two games.
400 games?
Yeah, it's not a lot. It's not like, oh, my God, it's desperate times.
Right, and I feel a little bit like, what are the ratings, right? Like, this is information that needs to be presented with, like, well, what are the ratings like? And the thing is, like, these teams know that their attendance is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the ratings and the attendance for the teams that aren't tanking? Because, like, that's part of the process now is, like, we're going to tank. So does it mean that does that mean that the sport is losing interest? No. Or does it just mean that the tanking teams, like, less people want to go out and see a terrible team?
Right, and when they're good, they'll come back. It's not,
exactly.
And that's part of the...
I think that's all part of the calculus.
Yeah, it's the economics of the game. They take that into consideration. You know, when we have down years, we're going to be doing crazy promotions to try to get, you know, people to come out to the ball game.
Yeah.
So their numbers are going to be different, and that's factored into everything. But then if they build up a farm system of a half a dozen players who are going to be superstars for 4 or 5 years before they have to pay them any money, that's when they start raking, because people fill the stadiums and they're paying these guys nothing.
Exactly.
Unless the new economics is that they're paying them nothing if they're giving them 9 years, $45,000 or $45 million contract.
The Albies economics.
Yeah, that's like, let's do this. Sign me up. So that wraps up headlines.
Great.
We're going to do a little bit of starting nine now in honor of the Pokemon Detective Pikachu. This is nine players with animated films that you've seen.
Yes.
And not just animated films in general, but just the animated films that you've seen.
Right, because here's the thing. I was going to do a Pikachu one, a Pokemon one, but I was like, the only one that anyone really knows is Pikachu.
Right. I don't know any of them other than that.
Right. So I was like, well, that's not going to be fun, because I'm just going to be saying random sounds that may or may not be actual Pokemon.
Right.
So then I thought, all right, well, what about animated films? I'm like, well, I think we've done some animated films, but then I was like, what about just animated films that I've seen? Because I have not seen that many. I don't have children. I have dogs, which don't count as children. I know some people say dogs count as children. But they don't watch cartoons.
Okay.
I have one dog that couldn't care less about anything that's ever on the television, and the other dog just looks out the window. So I'm not going to put on a cartoon for anyone's enjoyment other than myself. So it has to be something that would be compelling for an adult. And I'm not counting stuff I watch with my kids because I have no idea.
Okay.
Like, I see clips of movies and I think like Lady and the Tramp, and like, maybe I saw that when I was a kid. I don't know. So I'm not including that on this list.
So let her rip.
Okay. One of the best animated films I've ever seen, the best quality, storytelling, blah, blah, blah. The Juan Legores movie.
Okay. That's good.
Juan Legores.
I'm up there too. Lego movie is awesome.
Yeah. The Batman Lego movie, no thank you. I think there's a sequel to the Lego movie coming. I might see that.
Yeah,
oh, it is out. It? All right. Yeah. Well, I don't have kids, so I don't know. Oh, you know what the one movie I wish that I had on here, which I didn't, is Mastermind. Is that? No, Megamind.
Oh, yeah. That was the one? Will Ferrell, right?
Will Ferrell and I think Clooney.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I really liked that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not on here, and I don't feel like doing a thing. The Lion, Scott Kingery, which I have seen the cartoon, the animated cartoon, the animated film, and I've seen the musical thing.
And now they have the new movie coming up soon too, the John Favreau,
right? The
live action,
yeah, the live action ish,
yeah.
Did they do that?
Jungle
it's not
Book.
Live action, but Jungle Book. They did one like that. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, pretty good. All right. Victor the Incred-Robles.
That was good too, the first one. I haven't seen the second one, but the first one was good.
I have not seen the second one because I don't have kids, but I have also seen the first one. Drew Schreckenrider. Which I think should be his nickname.
It should be, yeah. It may be now. Could catch on.
Yeah.
Shrek was great. First one was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen the second or the third, but first one's great. Wreck-It Jorge Ralfaro. So yeah, Jorge Alfaro and Wreck-It Ralph, which I thought was very good.
Yeah.
Wally Adams.
Oh, Wally.
Willie Adams.
Great one. So,
Willie Adamas. Wally Adamas. That's what I meant to say. Adamas. I forgot my E in there.
Wally Adams.
Adams. Wally Adams. I think I got my Matt Adams and my Willie Adamas mixed up. All right. Fantastic Lucius Fox.
Nice. That is a good animated film.
How great is it that there's a guy named Lucius Fox in the minor leagues, but he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that film is just so good. Though it's a little bit, you know, it's a Wes Anderson film, so it's a little bit more indie film style than my... It would be right up my alley. I'm friends with... one of the grandchildren of, or great-grandchildren or grandchildren, of Raoul Dahl.
Uh-huh.
So I got to see that in a private screening, and it was very cool. Yeah, very cool. I went to their wedding on Martha's Vineyard.
Nice.
I took one of those little mini planes. Have you ever been on one of those?
Two-seaters?
Like, no, it was like an eight-seater.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, terrifying. Basically, because of the weather, we kind of flew sideways.
Oh, nice. Like, did you land like on a 45-degree angle into the wind?
Here's the thing. Yeah, 45-degree angle, right? So here's the thing. I'm terrified. I don't want to say I'm having a problem with my bodily waste systems.
Right.
But it was terrifying. And then I look over, and the pilot's like not even holding the stick, and he's kind of chilling out. I was like, all right, well, that's probably fine. Yeah. That's probably fine.
If he's not sweating bullets... I should be okay.
Right. If the pilot's like not even caring, then this is probably the chillest thing that ever was. But I never was able to fully get comfortable flying through a giant cloud the whole way from Martha's Vineyard to Logan Airport. Anyway, no one cares, so we're moving on. Troy Ratatulowitzki.
That's good. Good movie. My wife and I were actually out in Los Angeles when they did the premiere at the Kodak Theater. So we saw the whole red carpet, the big, huge ordeal for that. And then a couple days later, we saw the movie. It was really good.
Enjoyed it. Patton Oswalt as the rat, one of the comedy greats, for those who don't know. I guess he's kind of an alt comic, though, right, to some degree?
He's got a huge following, though.
Yeah, but he's
hysterical.
He's great. And then lastly, but not leastly, The Nightmare Before Chris Davis.
With a C?
With a C.
That's good. Awesome. So that wraps up starting nine. Now we're going to move into extra innings, taking a look outside the world of baseball. Things happening. Busy week. If you're a football fan, last week was a big deal. Last week?
Yeah, the draft. We didn't talk about this before.
No, not at all.
From last, but we didn't talk about it at all. And like, it was actually, I think the draft started the day we did our podcast.
Did.
And like, of course, it's a huge thing, right?
It's a huge thing. And being out of the country, it's not even on my radar. But if I was in, you know, back in the States and was aware of, you know, all the build up on the sports channels and stuff, which I don't watch at all down here.
It's called Deportes channel down there.
Right, right. The Ocho. So, it was all the drama going into the first pick and, you know, the Rosen situation and what's going to happen with him. And he's our guy and then he's not. And just it makes for unbelievably great sports drama. You know, that whole thing. They build it up like it's, a huge deal. And now Rosen's with the Dolphins and he's got a redemption motivation and I'll show the world type of thing. And
I mean, there's so many great potential storylines off of this. There's the redemption route, which everyone will get super excited about. But there's also that sort of snarky crash and burn route that's a little bit like on everyone's mind. Like, what if this guy just Ryan Leafs it? You know what I mean? Like,
some people are saying it's a huge risk because of how short Murray is.
So
I get it. He's got to perform on the field, but to say we're all in.
The first pick in the draft?
Yeah.
Oh, it just feels like too much. Like, what was Russell Wilson's pick?
Oh, I don't even think he was a first rounder.
Oh, okay, yeah. He was like second or third, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I know he wasn't that high.
See, like, that feels more like what you do with a guy like that. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, then it becomes part of what fuels him is to, I don't know, but like he's already like bumped out the previous quarterback. Yeah. And like,
who was the first round pick the year before?
Yeah. Like what? Top eight?
Yeah.
Top.
Yeah. He was there. The Cardinals first round pick. But I think people are lulled into everybody was down on Baker Mayfield last year and he wound up having a great season. He was a leader, a field general, an inspiration on field too. So they're like, well, you know, maybe we can do, you know, maybe there's something to it. Let's go all in here.
What if the Cardinals were able to get cleats, but like with a lift in them?
Like a little bit of a pat, you know, like
not like a heel. Not like a heel.
A little lift
we're not talking
inside.
Heels.
Half inch.
We're just talking about like maybe an inch lift. Think about it.
It's a possibility. It's going to be interesting. I mean, the type of offense that they're going to have to run to capitalize on his skill set, which is why they picked him, because their new coach definitely, you know, he fits into that. So there's a long history with, Kingsbury, the new coach for the Cardinals.
Prince Barry, right. Duke Barry.
But he...
Earl Barry.
he was scouting Murray when he was at Texas Tech. I don't remember.
Okay.
So there is he opted and chose Oklahoma. So, but he had a history with him. So that's the big part of it is that there's a history there. They know each other. They go back to when Kyler Murray was playing, in junior high level. So there's all this energy and all this hype, you know, and he better deliver because if he doesn't, things are going to get ugly real fast.
Then they're going to have to use another first round draft pick on another quarterback.
Especially if they tank again. But it's always interesting when you see some of the trades that are made, trading down, trading up, who gets what. Did the teams really improve that drastically? Who's going to, you know? I didn't follow enough of it to say that, you know, who had the best draft.
Yeah.
But I know that...
I liked what the Patriots did. They got themselves a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get themselves a guy that can open up the field a little bit, you know, and like doesn't need to be like a burner, but can be a guy who can create some separation. Tom Brady throws a pinpoint pass. This guy goes up and gets it.
Because
they don't got Gronk, so they got to fix it somehow. There's no Gronk in the draft.
Right.
Not that the Patriots could get anyway. And so you have to sort of like, I don't know, it's just so funny to think of the Patriots like trying to get better. Like shouldn't they just have no draft picks?
Right, like, you should. It's like, no, not allowed. Sorry.
It's just like, you know what? Every time you win a Super Bowl, you lose draft picks. Right. And then the more Super Bowls you win, it becomes exponential to the point where you can wind up with no picks. And you just have to deal with it, man. Get over it. You can pick up the free agents off the scrap heap.
They're always good fits. Belichick is really good at finding the players that are good fits for their schemes.
Yeah.
And they might be cast off elsewhere, but they wind up thriving, you know, in the New England environment. But I the one thing I heard is that the Redskins had one of the top picks. So they got, was it Haskins?
Dropped to them at 15 or whatever.
Which he was livid, like Rosen was last year. Eight teams made a huge mistake. That's what Rosen said last year. And not so much because he led the Cardinals to a 13 record.
Is he talking about the Dolphins this year? Is that one of the eight teams?
Right. But Haskins was saying similar things too. He's like, he was pissed off that he dropped that low. You're still a first rounder. You're the number one pick of a team. You should be happy about that. So always interesting. It's always the biggest, one of the biggest hype events of the year in sports.
Yeah. And it's just like an administrative, it's an administrative function and everyone's like all geeked out. And the Giants fans are losing their minds over the Giants weird picks.
Right. Yeah. It's just
my favorite things. Booing Goodell. It's fantastic. Well,
and then the Giants.
And we all know where Robert Kraft was.
Right. He's watching videos of himself. But the Giants were all, you know, fans were just livid that they chose the quarterback that they did. They're kind of like, is it Luck? Is this? I don't remember what the guy's name was.
Long?
Yeah. Luck? I don't. Who knows?
I think it was Long. Daniel Long or something like that.
But the fans were like, why are we picking this guy? Why? Huh?
I saw a great tweet. Someone said, the Giants' new quarterback looks like the actor that would play Eli Manning in the Peyton Manning movie.
That's great. That's awesome. So other sports news, the playoffs in both the NHL and NBA rage on.
Yeah, the NHL, three of the series are tied at two.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
And the other one is an upset.
Well, the other one's
3-0.
3-0, and it's an upset. Yeah.
So hockey has been it's very interesting because the teams that are left, you're kind of like, this is the final. It's going to be the final four. What? Huh? So yeah, there's it's going to be if the Bruins get knocked out, you kind of get, I don't want to say a lower tier. Sharks are good. Avalanche used to be good. It's just a different group of people. I always love that in sports when it's a different group. I remember, you know, some of the best Stanley Cups, like the Kings. The Kings, when they won 2 out of 3 years, they were one of the last teams in.
Yeah.
But they made for great stories when they wound up, you know, winning the cup. You know, those are exciting. And now I guess there's big hullabaloo in the NBA about refereeing. And how, you know, there's certain referees that are out to get certain teams and or players, or the game is not being, they're not allowing the players to play.
Yeah.
I mean, offense.
Well, I mean, it's a bad look when James Harden's been kicked out of whatever 7 games in his career and 5 of them are with one ref. That's a bad look.
Yeah, that
for that
look
ref.
Good. No. And he's ref.
That makes it sound like it's that ref.
Was he the ref in the last game, or is he going to be the ref in this game?
I think he's the ref in the next game.
So that, and it's in Houston, so it'll be interesting to see. That's tonight, I believe. So that'll be interesting. But I'm not a huge. I liked Harden when he was with Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Because he was more of he just seemed like he was this guy coming off the bench. He was
the Arizona
man.
Guy, the sixth
he just,
man.
He
yeah.
just seemed like he was this, you know. But now that he's kind of like the centerpiece of that team, he just comes across as too much of a whiner.
Yeah. I mean, he's constantly complaining about the refs, and he is a Vlade Divac European soccer player level flopper.
Yeah.
Like, there's videos of him that are just him flopping that are majestic.
Yeah. And he gets a lot of calls. Tons of calls.
Yeah, and because it looks like, because how is the person saying they're supposed to think, like, oh, he's faking that someone poked him in the eye? But, like, no, you watch the replay, and the guy's hand was, like, 3 feet from him. Yeah. Amazing.
Well, one of the things that he does is he does that lean in after he takes a shot.
Yeah.
And even Kevin Durant was saying, is like, it's not dirty playing. He says he's taking advantage of what the system allows him. And he says that's just smart basketball.
Well, the ones I have a problem with is when you like jump 4 feet into another player.
Right.
And like, well, that's not fair. The player's 4 feet away.
Right. And that's been his thing. He's turned that into a weapon, you know, for him to get to the foul line quite a bit.
Yeah.
But there's drama also in the Philadelphia series, and I like it when there's bad blood. That's a good thing. Reminds me of the old Pistons and Lakers and Pistons and Bulls and some of those matchups.
Remember the Knicks and Heat went crazy on each other one
year?
Yeah,
oh, God, yeah. Beating each other up.
Yeah.
Riley's pulling people. Who was the...
it was a Gundy, right? Van Gundy.
Yeah, on his stomach holding someone's foot as it was being dragged. It was crazy. Crazy. Stan Van Gundy, I think. Or not Stan.
Yeah. Or was it Vince McMahon was there, I think. Vince McMahon.
No, those. I love it when it gets heated like that. That's good stuff. Sad news yesterday. Was it Mayhew? Peter Mayhew?
Yeah. Peter Mayhew passed away. Chewbacca.
Played Chewbacca in every Star Wars film up until... Was he in the last one, too?
I don't think he was in Solo, was he?
I don't know if he was in Solo, but I know he had been in the other ones up until that point.
Yeah.
I think he, which was surprising because he was an elderly gentleman at the time.
Yeah.
Not that Chewie
Well, you know, those movies, the first movie was made, what, 40 years ago?
Yeah, 77. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a while ago.
It's amazing that as many of these people were still around.
And I thought Wookiees lived longer.
Well, maybe that's what happened.
Maybe he's older than he's older. I think he was only in his 70s, right? Mid-70s, something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But in Wookiee years, what is that?
Yeah, it's like 700 years, think, something like that. But we'll have, you know, not that we're going to notice a difference when somebody else, unless they have a different gait and you can pick up on their gait or their, you know, how they personify.
Right. They can fix that in post, though.
Yeah, fix it in post. So the big news of the weekend... We could probably have an entire podcast episode on this, and I don't know how many people haven't watched the Long Night episode of Game of Thrones, but it was epic.
The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yeah, it was epic.
So we're gonna be speaking freely here for a couple minutes. So if you don't want to hear spoilers from Game of Thrones, then bye. It was great talking to you.
See you next week.
See you next week or the week after. Whenever. But, all right, so we're going to do Game of Thrones here. So, first of all, first impressions, I feel like this show has suffered from its success in that the writing in it is so lazy. And it is, and maybe it's because they're just going off on their own. I saw someone do a great tweet. He said, when the stories stopped being written by... George R. R. Martin and started being written by TV writers, that the show has suffered from being too TV-ish. Like, too many big names don't die. Like, not enough people died in that fight, frankly.
Right.
Like, we lost some fringe guys, and it was like, yeah, sad to see him go, oh, that guy, it's...
Right.
Yeah, the guy, he was in the other thing.
You know, the guy with the beard.
Yeah, the beard guy, and that's a shame. But like none of the big names died, and like this is a battle with zombie people.
Right.
And you see, like, and no offense to the chubby Sam guy, but like that guy lived?
Yeah, he was in what, 20 dog piles and survived every one of them.
Like what? That guy lived?
How?
And somehow like I don't really have a problem with the way that the Night King dies. We did spoiler alert already.
Right.
Anyway, I think the show is best when it's dealing with like the strange world of politics of this place, as opposed to dragons and Night Kings. And I don't even know if the Night King himself is really in the book.
I don't know enough about the books, but I know a lot of people were like, how could you focus the entire first season on Winter is Coming and then have him killed by someone who we have no idea how she got to the point where she was leaping in the air? How did she get by all those people to get to that
point?
And
that's the point, is you, as a storyteller, you can't just spring that on people. You have to show, like the last we saw, she was running out of a room.
Right.
Or running to the back of a room. We don't even know if it was out of a room.
Right. She's running into the shadows the last time we saw
her. Yeah. Like that was the last time we saw her. And then it was like, there was no build up to like, oh, well, this is what's at play. Or like the fact that they're able to drag out, you know, make it last as long as they did before the Night King actually got to Bran. The fact that they didn't explain that it needed to be dragged out, that time was needed. That's bad storytelling, because then the audience doesn't know what's happening. Right. It's bad enough everything's so goddamn dark.
Right.
Unless,
you
guys,
yeah, turn
bring
on
it up.
The,
hey, you guys
God
ever see the Two Towers?
Right?
Yeah, I know, right? Like, you ever see the Two Towers? That's at night in the rain, and we can see everything that's happening.
Right, right.
The Battle of Helm's Deep, I'm talking
yes.
about.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that most people were expecting, or one thing is that they were commenting about was, how did she get there? So that's
right.
One thing. And then I think unless they fill that blank in a future episode, which I would assume would be this week's episode, it's kind of, it'll leave you're scratching your head going like, how did she get by that? Unless you're going to go
right.
like, well, remember everything she learned and the black and the build that black and white
right.
and the, you know, the faceless men thing. Well, she just did the faceless men thing, but that how they did that with like one of the captains for the Night King feels this little breeze and kind of looks over his shoulder, and then she's, you know, on top of him type of thing. It's like, okay, how did we get there? And
right.
if they explain that in the next episode with a little bit of a flashback or something, I don't know, that will help.
It's still bad storytelling to explain it in the next episode.
Right. I agree.
Because
I agree.
We want to see it in the moment.
As
we
it
want
happens.
To know,
how
like, oh, wait a second,
there.
she's going to try to do something, or she's on the move, as opposed to Jon wetting himself
right.
in front
so
of that
dragon.
So how
about that, though? How about that? You have Jon and Daenerys, who have been like these, Jon at least is vulnerable, screws up. He's put himself in difficult situations before, and miraculously gets out of them, like cheating death.
Yes. Absolutely terrible tactician. Like maybe the worst ever in all of sci-fi and action adventure.
but he and
Dany
were
film.
Awful in this episode. They did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. And Bronn, what the heck was he doing? He wargs out, goes off with the crows. We have no idea where he went. Hopefully that's another thing where it had to play a part in something that's happening in the future. That he's going to be like in this next episode. Well, while all that was going on, I went off and I saw this. Because he
right.
did have, you know, you're expecting something monumental
from
him.
Yeah, he went and did the crows thing and like, well, wait, that's it? You're just going to...
That's it.
Yeah. He's like, he comes back, he's like, oh yeah, the Night King's coming. Like, yeah, no, we know. He's literally right outside.
Right. And then he walks up to him, Bronn's completely content, happy,
yeah.
just whatever. Knows he's
going
to die.
And again, I like that because you feel like, oh, okay, so this is where this turns and something's going to happen. But then the way they do it, and like the way they kill Theon, where he just like runs at him like
yeah.
a doofus. Like,
well,
there's no
Bronn,
tactical advantage
no.
to running at a guy who's standing around 20 other people.
Right.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Now like, he should have died like Sean Bean's character. There's your tie-in,
right.
Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones, in where he just was like fighting to the very last drop of blood that he had in his body.
Right.
Very right. similar to Mormont, whatever, how he died.
Mm-hmm.
Like... And then fine, then he dies, and then but like it's just so like impotent. Now, granted, the guy's got no testicles, so maybe
right,
that
so
was
maybe that,
a metaphor.
He had nothing to live for.
It's just
much.
Weak writing, and when it's like you have these amazing characters and these amazing scenarios, and then you're just like, well, wait, that, and then she just comes flying out of nowhere. It's almost comical.
But it was, I mean, the whole thing with the knife and the journey that knife has taken, that it was intended to kill Bronn,
yeah.
but it winds up killing the Night King. So,
this
sets up for what happens next. To me,
right.
I this had to happen the way that it did. I have no issue with the Night King dying. I didn't think the Night King was going to march down to King's Landing.
Right.
Some people were disappointed that didn't happen. It's like, no, this is the Game of Thrones, not the Game of the
right.
Night King.
Exactly.
So it had to go, you know, whether it happened in this episode or next episode, it still was all about getting back to who's on the throne.
Right. And I don't have any problem with him dying, though. I think you could have done a better job of dragging it out, of making it more interesting, of bringing in like the just it could have been it just could have been better.
I thought it was good. And I enjoyed it.
But it was fine, but it could have been so much better. And that's when you look at it and you're just thinking off the top of your head, this could have been better, that could have been better. And like I didn't have any problem with Arya being the one that kills him. Like she has trained for years to kill people.
Right. She's an assassin.
And they tried to show it in that where she's in the library, like, look, she moves so silently, they can't hear her move, but they can hear her drops blood. Of blood.
Right.
I get it, she moves silent. But here's the thing. What was the point of that scene except for that? And that was a bad scene because then you're like, well, what am I watching this scene for? Because she's, why are you in this room? You're not trying to save anyone. We don't even know what you're doing in the room. And then she winds up leaving the room.
Right.
But if she wasn't going to retrieve something that was needed or help a person out that was in danger,
she's running
for her
life.
I'm going to go in this room. Oh, I'm going to stay in this room. As soon as you see there's trouble in there, then leave. If you're silent, lady.
Right.
You can just, why walk around the room and be silent and then leave?
Right.
Silent, but deadly.
So what's coming up next?
Things get animated on the next episode of Pokemon Detective Shinsu Choo.